The presenting sponsor of Moon Tower Soccer is FVF Law.
To find out what makes FVF a different kind of injury law firm, you can visit FVF.law.
Hello, friends, and thanks for listening to Moon Tower Soccer. This week, we'll cover Austin's win against DC United, their loss against LAFC, and then we're going to spend quite a bit of time on a big announcement that came out Sunday afternoon about some Austin FC personnel. My name is Landon Cottom, and I'm joined, as always, by Mr. Jeremiah Bentley.
Hey, everybody, I'm Jeremiah Bentley, and I'm, again, happy to be back here after, what, two out of the last 3 weeks off traveling, and happy to see out the rest of the year here in Austin, even though, like, there's not a lot of hope for, well, there's no hope now for Austin FC, but we're still going to have a good time, and we've got a lot to look forward to, and so I'm
lots to talk about still, yeah, too.
There's still a ton to talk about, and I think there's an off season that will be full of opportunities. So really quickly, before we got into that, I wanted to mention a friend of ours, Soccer Assist, which is a nonprofit that raises money largely for mini pitches, those little like futsal courts in communities that need help. They have their 8th annual now soccer fundraiser on October 20th. It will feature Skyrocket, which is a 80s, 90s cover band, which I love, really fun party band. And then also Heartburn, which is a Talking Heads band. And they will host that event on the 20th at Q2 Stadium. So if you want to get a ticket for that, be sure to check them out at soccerassist.org. I've gone to, I don't know, 4 or 5 of them. Always had a good time. Good people. Good soccer people. It's always cool when you get to engage with a part of the community that's kind of been around since before Austin FC was a thing. And remember that, like, Austin really is a soccer city with a lot of history that extends beyond the last 3 years.
Yeah, absolutely. Talking about giving to the community, this is a bit of a humble brag, but I am a patron of KUT and KUTX, and I donated some money to them, and they were sending out thank you cards, just like handwritten, like postcard things. And on the bottom of mine, it said something about Verde Listos and made a mention of Moon Tower Soccer. And my wife was like, did you make this donation under the Moon Tower name? I was like, no, I just put my name on it. So whoever like read it must have just recognized me. And went to the game on Saturday, ran into our friend Jana, who we see at Austin FC 2 games and some of the first team games quite a bit. And it was her friend Sonia, who I've met several times, who does some volunteering there. And she said that she was filling out those cards. And my name was the first one that popped off. So she just decided to leave a little note. I thought that was nice, and was happy to get to say hi to her on Saturday.
That is really nice. It's good to get that recognition. And thank you for supporting the community. Well, let's get into the big news. I feel like there was...
Oh, man.
I feel like I was just setting it up, say, like, I expected that we would have a lot of speculation about, like, the future of Josh Wolf and, like, the 2024 roster build. And we probably wouldn't know anything until after the final game against San Jose on the 21st. And then we got a press release, I think Phil West said at 5:17 yesterday when he was in HEB at the lunch meat counter, that kind of, I don't know, like, made a big statement about the future of Austin FC and what we can expect in terms of changes, like, now and into 2024.
Yeah, so let's just read through the announcement real quick. So they said that Austin FC has adding an entirely new scouting and recruiting department consisting of 5 new full-time scouts at the first team level who will be stationed throughout Europe and South America. And then also announced that Austin FC's chief scout, Manuel Junco, has left the club. And then also announced that Sean Rubio has taken a job with another MLS club. We found out today that was announced that he's going back to Toronto FC, which is where he came here from. And then what else am I missing here? What else was in this? Oh, yeah, the biggest part.
Go for the quote on the coach. I think it's probably the biggest news that I think everybody probably wants to discuss.
Yeah, a quote from Rodolfo Borrell in here saying, I believe Josh and his staff deserve increased levels of support from our scouting network. We intend to deliver that support immediately. Josh is a very good young head coach. And although results this year are disappointing, we are fortunate to have a coach with his level of commitment and knowledge. I am confident he is the right leader for this team. And so that last line there, I think specifically, is them doubling down and saying, Josh Wolf is the coach next year, period.
Yeah, I think, yes, I will agree with that. I was going to say, if Josh Wolf will be the coach for at least the first part of the season next year, is, I think, as far as I'm willing to go on that.
And I think he's not getting fired after this season, though.
No, for sure. Yes, absolutely. I would agree with that. No, it's that was a commitment to, you know, the question around whether it's the roster build or the coach or some combination of both. And it seems like Burrell definitely believes that it was the roster. And this, you know, we've said all the way back to like the hiring press conferences that he's gone out of his way to say nice things about Josh Wolf in a way that seemed like authentic and not just the kind of things you expect people to say in a press conference. So,
we heard of that was many games ago before.
Right.
It was like a 10 game winless streak. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, how did you take the news? What are your high level takeaways from this announcement?
Yeah, I mean, surprised. I'm surprised. I'm glad they made a statement, though. I think that was good. I actually had some notes written up talking about how, like, in any league in the world, like after this kind of season, most coaches are going to get fired. And for most teams in this league, most coaches are getting fired after this. And so, like, we've said this all season, that there's a lot of things we don't know, but after a season like this, like, the club needs to make some kind of statement about this and say, like, what's going on? What's the plan forward? And like, is there enough goodwill in the locker room? This announcement doesn't answer that question, but it does answer the question, like, what we think the problem is and what we're going to do to fix it. And what they said was, the scouting and player recruitment is not good enough. The roster isn't good enough. We're going to fix that part.
And I will 100% agree with that part. I still think after these 3 years and after this result, you can work on both things at the same time. Like,
yeah,
given like the number of coaches that were let go that were in similar positions. And I think I don't remember where Josh is now, but he's one of the most tenured coaches in Major League Soccer, if I remember right now, given like,
I think
all
if
the turnover.
Count from he was hired, it's I think third or fourth. But I think if you talk about when he like started coaching games, he's still pretty high up there, which is kind of crazy to think about.
So I would just say, if it was me, it would have been one more game, and I would have made both moves to overhaul the scouting department, which I think is no doubt been a huge miss, and also at the same time, make a move with a coach, because I think. For me, they're both lacking. We'll see. Like, I had a little flashback to, it's like a very University of Texas specific thing, but, you know, Vince Young was finally talented enough that Matt Brown won a national championship despite his like coaching deficiencies. And so I'm now like in the spot where I'm like, well, hopefully the new scouting department and Burrell are good enough that they can overcome what I still believe is like a lack of an elite level head coach.
Yeah. So let's read this tweet from Adrian Healy today. He said, regardless of where you stand on the issue, by the global standards of modern pro soccer management, Josh Wolf is extraordinarily lucky to still be the coach of Austin FC after 3 seasons in the job. A record of 37-52-21 after 110 games in all comps would be fatal in 99% of cases. By pledging to keep Wolf, ownership is effectively saying, we believe Josh Wolf is a one percenter. He is that special. That belief is both brave and extremely unorthodox. Is it based on something tangible or merely on a shared history / friendship? I don't know, but we're going to find out. I think a lot of people are paying attention to this tweet from Adrian Healy. And although it's like interesting to see Adrian be so candid, he's not saying anything extreme here, right? He's just stating facts that like, yeah, most coaches would be fired in this situation.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, because he even leaves it with, like, there's two choices here, right? It's based on something tangible or merely your shared history and friendship.
Yeah.
Right? And those are your two options. Do you have a belief about which one of those is more important right now? Wait, oh, well, let's go back to a different narrative, because I know we've talked during the day about all this, but there seemed to be this kind fairly common belief that Burrell was not in charge of this decision for himself. Like, I read a lot of that, especially on Twitter, and I'm sure some on Reddit and some on Facebook too, that like, he does not ultimately have the choice in hiring or firing the coach. Do you have a reaction to that position?
I mean, so looking back at the history of Austin FC, the fact that Josh Wolf was hired before Claudio Reyna, it means Claudio Reyna didn't necessarily pick Josh Wolf. I think the best case scenario is that Austin FC ownership told both of them, hey, we're looking at these guys, would you be okay with working with them? Like, that's at most what happened, right? And at the worst case scenario is they said, hey, Josh Wolf is our coach. Do you want to be the GM? And so just that alone, it puts it like it's not beyond the realm of possibility that in the Austin FC structure that the sporting director doesn't have the power to fire or hire a coach. The part where I struggle to believe it is that Rodolfo Borrell, a guy who has his resume, his pedigree in the game, would come into a job knowing that he can't pick his own coach. And so I don't know what the truth is. I'm guessing, as most things are, it's somewhere in between. And that maybe it's like Precourt brings in Borrell. Borrell takes the job, but Precourt says, you can't fire Wolf until X date. Like, would you buy that scenario?
I would buy the scenario that yes, that I don't know if it would be that specific to a date, but like, yeah, not before the 2024 season. And like, let's see how 2024 starts or goes before those kinds of moves are made. Because and that's fair to think that a sporting director may want to come in and spend more time and have an off season and see how the coach does with like different players and a possible different philosophy before making a big move, whether that was the one that we would personally make or not.
You could also see the value in just having like some level of stability when there is going to be a lot of changes this off season. I think there's close to like 10 players that may be out of contract at the end of the year. And so having some type of stability, like if Borrell, maybe he does want to get rid of Wolf, but he doesn't have the guy he would like to bring in instead available right now. Maybe he's saying, let's just stem back. Let's let it run the way it's going for now. And I can start building the roster that I want to build. And then if someone else does become available at some point, then I can make that switch then. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. And we didn't talk a lot about the scouts other than to say that was like a change that needs to happen. One thing that I had kind of forgotten is that Manuel Junco was like a Columbus USMNT guy before. So, I mean, in some way that maybe this shows like some ambition to move away from the good old boys club and make a move that needed to be made. The other question I have about that is like, these are European South Americans. Like, where does the in-league scouting come from? Like, do you see it all coming from like the coach, or is it some combination of the coach and Borrell? I mean, will that Sean Rubio around and someone that really knows Major League Soccer? Like, where do you see that expertise coming from?
Yeah, I mean, I would guess a lot of that would be like in-house, because like you have people here and we're going to be watching, like we'll have eyes on most levels of the American soccer structure at this point, right? With coaches at the academy level, at the next pro level. And then it's pretty easy to get your hands on film, and you know the competition level in USL and things like that. So that's probably a little bit easier to keep in house. But having that many people on the ground in Europe and South America, I think, like, I don't know that we ever knew how many scouts we did have on the ground. I think Manuel Junco's name is the only one we ever heard, but I don't know that that's uncommon. I don't know that people are like naming out every scout that they use all the time. But I was looking up how many I thought this, like, is five. They said five. Is five a lot? I don't know the answer to that.
I know. I was looking for that, too. And I even went back to the, have you ever gone to archive.org, which is like they archive websites. It's like the Internet Wayback Machine.
Oh, yeah.
And I went through like several versions of the Austin FC website to see if the scouts had ever been listed on the site to find comparison. And, you know, I went back to 2020 and 2021 and then up to today. And like, they aren't. So it's really hard to have any perspective on what that's like. Five full-time staff scouts seems like a pretty good number for MLS club.
I found an article from the BBC in 2016 that cites a stat that says the average Premier League club has seven international scouts. And so for Austin to have five, like, that seems, I would guess most MLS clubs have fewer than five.
Yeah,
if I were to guess.
Yeah, I would guess that way too. What else?
Before was it was Manuel Junco and Diego Cerati, Cecilia Dominguez's agent.
Exactly. Yeah, that guy's really on the way out now, I would think, without any connections to either the sporting director or the head scout.
Let's go back a little bit and talk about what this means going forward.
Yeah, so let's do that. That's what I was hoping you would want to
go. We talked about all of the different scenarios of do they actually believe in Wolf, or are we just saying this? Maybe they do. Like, for all we know, maybe Borrell came in, thought this roster was a complete mess, thought everything was a mess, sees a rough product in Josh Wolf that he thinks has the right mind for the job, can grow into something bigger than what he's done so far. That's a possibility too. Maybe that's not true, but maybe it is. Even if that isn't true, if Borrell is just biding his time until he's allowed to fire Wolf or until he finds a better candidate, do you think that how much does that affect his roster build? Can Rodolfo Borrell still just build the roster that he wants to and then bring in a different coach whenever the time is right?
I believe so. I mean, I believe that from the other things we've heard from Borrell, that he's a believer in this. He said he's a believer in the coach, so I just have to trust him at this point. But a believer in this system. So I think that he can recruit the best players for the kind of system that he wants to play. And obviously he has a lot of experience in Europe, with a certain way of play and with Manchester City. So I think he can do that and just plug a different coach in if it doesn't work out with his current coach. I don't think that he's gonna hamstring this roster by limiting it to, Josh Wolf's not the only coach that can coach a club that plays this way. Do you agree with that?
I do, and I think specifically because of the first thing you said, that people like to say that Wolf ball doesn't work for Austin FC or whatever, and if you fire Josh Wolf, quote unquote, Wolf ball is not leaving. This is Josh Wolf didn't invent this. It was popularized by several people, but the modern version is Pep Guardiola, who Rodolfo Borrell worked for and came up in the same system in Barcelona coaching there. And so whether or not Josh Wolf is here, this style of play is staying. And for that reason, I think Borrell can build a roster that he thinks can play in that system. And if Josh Wolf is the coach, then it's going to be pretty close to if someone else he brings in is the coach, because he's not going to fire Wolf and then bring in somebody who plays a completely different system. He's a believer. I think part of the reason why I think it might be true that Borrell really believes in Wolf is because Borrell is a zealot for this system of play, and Josh Wolf is too. And maybe they're just like-minded kindred spirits on that point. But all that to be said, I don't think it's not you're going to build this whole roster and then fire the coach and bring in someone who's going to tear it down. Burrell's going to want somebody who can come in and run that system as well.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's going to do it at least similarly. And we don't know who that is. And, I think it's this is such an unpredictable league. And the Houston coach, whose name I'm forgetting right now.
Ben Olsen, there you go.
Ben Olsen would have never been a guy on my list. If we get rid of Josh Wolf when Ben Olsen was available, is that a guy I want to bring in? But now you're looking at Houston's fifth in the West, just won a cup. It's weird to find out, to think about who might be the right coach for the job. So we'll see where things go next year. But I feel like, despite these statements, surely this has to be a coach on the hot seat. Surely if 2024 starts off 2023 does through the, or 23-3 has gone lately, we would be looking at a different coach.
Yeah, and you look at Borrell's connections are mostly going to be in Europe, right? That's when European coaches are going to become available, is next summer after European season's in. And so if he has his eye on certain people, there's a good chance that's when those people are going to be available.
And I think it would be totally worth it to wait on the right guy to do that, right? And see what's going to happen. Do you want to talk? You mentioned there's going to be a bunch of contracts coming off the books. Do you want to just quickly run through who we think some of them might be, just to give some context for what the offseason looks like?
Yeah.
So I've got it pulled up, by the way. I look at you.
Okay, I was going to say, give me one second and I'll pull it up too.
I'm going to have to trust that Transfermarkt is right. These are pretty sure. We're just going to go through the people who are making a decent amount of money. But, Alex Ring is a very highly paid player. Diego Fagundes was and is now gone. Will Bruin, we think, is out of contract. Maxi Aruti makes a lot of money and is out of contract. Ethan Finley makes pretty good money and is probably out of contract. Adam Lundqvist. I mean, there's a lot of cash sitting out there. And Memo Rodriguez, too, that's available during this offseason to really do an overhaul. So maybe that's to your point. Maybe that's where continuity matters more than anything else. And we think Rodney is also, right? Which I know he doesn't make a lot of money because of the U22. I mean, it doesn't count a lot against the cap because of the U22 initiative, but it adds up additional roster flexibility.
Yeah, and yeah, looking at those guys. And then if you also, I know these guys aren't, we don't think about these guys, but like Charlie Asensio, Alfonso Ocampo-Chavez.
Yeah, and Sophie Jafal, too, is somebody else who's like seen some playing time, probably does not seem to be in long-term plans, especially if Josh Wolf is the coach. Like, there's a lot of spots opening up, even for guys that aren't that highly paid.
Yeah, and so, lots of movement coming this offseason. I think there's a few guys, if we say there's, I don't know, 10 guys who either on loan and we don't think are coming back, or contracts are up and we don't have to bring them back, I'm guessing maybe two or three of those guys stay
up,
end up
coming back. Yeah.
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 And we'll probably spend like a whole show on this sometime in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, we should dive into it before the offseason gets going, when we have the chance to sort of set up what it looks like, and we can go into specifically every one of these players and who we think should come back and who we want to come back and who we think should come back. So that's a little teaser for a future show, I guess.
Yeah, once the season is actually over.
Right. We do have one more week of that after the break. I mean, one more thing I want to cover on this one before we get into anything else is, do you think that the 2022 contract extension that Josh Wolf got, which leaves him under contract through the end of 2025, like, mattered a lot in this decision?
It very much could. I mean, I think it leans into the theory we were talking about, where Precourt said you can't fire Wolf until this point in time. And like, yeah, I mean, maybe you say it's Burrell's decision, but it's Precourt who's paying that contract.
Right, Precourt's
off,
right? Money, right?
Yeah. If you fire Josh Wolf, he's probably making decent money as coaches go. And so if you fire him, you have to pay him the rest of his contract. And the rest of his contract is through 25. Is that right?
Right. It is. I went and looked it up today.
So 2 full years of salary you're paying him. And like, I know that we would all say, like, it's fine, just do it. It's not our money. And so I could see how someone like Anthony Precourt might be a little hesitant to spend that kind of money if he doesn't think he absolutely has to. So it very well could play into the decision.
Yeah, I don't think it's a primary factor, but I can definitely see it being a factor and giving him a shot like through midseason next year.
Yeah. I wanted to mention one more thing about Sean Rubio. So as I mentioned, he goes back to Toronto. It looks like he's still going to be like the kind of the second in command there. So similar position as to what he was here. The title, I mean, titles are all kind of murky in this field in soccer anyway. So who knows if this is a promotion, it's only because maybe he has a few more responsibilities and maybe like Toronto has more space for him to take up those responsibilities. But it's not like this is like a huge step up for him leaving Austin.
Right. Right. It seems like a very parallel move. I did see it is a step up from whatever he was before, when he was in Toronto before, because I went back and looked at his title from then. So it's definitely a move up, but it seems largely similar. So he's responsible for the scouting department, in addition to working with the GM on the strategy and execution of player acquisitions across the first team and Toronto FC too. So it seems kind of like a lateral move, but I mean, I can see, if Burrell's like wanting to put his stamp on the club, like also having his own people to manage like these kinds of function probably makes sense.
The way that
this
was
valuable to him.
Tell me if you read this different. The way this read in the announcement to me was that this was like Rubio's decision to leave.
Cause it did say he had another job already. They just didn't say what the job was. Yeah. I agree.
And without saying too much, I know that Sean has like personal connections in Toronto still. So it may have been a thing he was looking to do anyway, but I don't know, because it also said Manuel Junco leaves the club or something.
Just left
it didn't
that,
say
yeah.
We fired him.
No, that's for true. So good for Sean. Sean's been a great, great person to talk to. Good dude. And so I think we can wish him all the success. in the world. And I feel like Toronto FC is a place where you are going to have lots of challenges and opportunities.
he'll get a chance to prove himself there for sure.
For sure. Maybe he didn't read that Athletic article about how dysfunctional it all was. And I can fix him. For sure. Yeah. Before we get a break, there is a media availability tomorrow at 10. I think we're both planning on going. I am. So
yeah, I'm planning on being there.
Follow Moon Tower Soccer on whatever social media channels you do. Landon and I will figure out a strategy to like break up bringing you coverage from the event and asking questions at the same time. But that'll be tomorrow's problem.
We covered all that we think we're going to get out of it. If there is anything that like, if it's just a couple of quotes that can be posted and that's all there is, we probably won't do anything else. But if there's something worth a longer discussion, we might post a little bonus episode later this week if we think it's necessary. So stay tuned on that. But if nothing else, we'll be there and we'll be able to send some tweets out and ask some questions.
All right. Hey, we have games too. You want to take a break and maybe talk about those?
Yep, let's do it. Hang tight. We'll be right back with more Moon Tower Soccer to talk about those two games. And we'll also talk about Austin FC 2 and their playoff win and what comes next for them. When no one is around. Moon Tower Soccer is brought to you by our friends at FBF Law, the official injury lawyers of Austin FC.
FBF is a different kind of personal injury law firm dedicated to community, transparency, and client education.
You can go to fbf.law to find out what makes FBF a different kind of injury law firm and why understanding your legal options can dramatically change the outcome of a case. Once again, that's fbf.law. Amplify Credit Union is a member-owned financial cooperative that served the needs of Central Texans for over 5 decades. Amplify's team lives and works in the community, making them experts on how members can achieve their financial goals.
What makes Amplify different? No bank fees. Amplify is the first financial institution in Texas to put an end to bank fees. In 2022, Americans paid almost $8 billion in overdraft fees alone. Millennials pay an average of $336 a year in bank fees, which works out to 6 Austin FC game tickets per person per year. So save up for 2024 by paying none of those bank fees with Amplify Credit Union.
Amplify membership is open to any Texas resident. Learn to trust your bank again at Amplify Credit Union. To learn more, go to www.goamplify.com/moontower.
We're happy again to talk about our premier sponsor, McGuire Woods Consulting. McGuire Woods Consulting helps companies and nonprofits navigate the political process in the Texas Capitol, which Landon doesn't love this stuff as much as I do, but there's a special session today and everything's already chaotic and people are threatening to sue each other and accusing each other of being alcoholics. And all kinds of good stuff. So, luckily, I don't keep up with that, and I don't care that much about it, but the folks at McGuire Woods Consulting can do that for you if you need help at the state, city, or national level.
With offices across the country and in 10 MLS cities, including Austin, Houston, and Dallas, McGuire Woods Consulting is solidly Verde and Black. Learn more about our friends at McGuire Woods Consulting at mwcllc.com. All right, we are back. We're going to talk first about Austin's midweek match against DC United, where they ended up winning 3-0. Their first victory in 10 games, 11 games. How many was it?
That's a lot of, well, I guess it was
a lot of games.
A lot of games, a lot of time. There was cup competitions. There was some time off in between. It's our first win since July 15th on the calendar. So it's nice to get that back. And pick up that win and keep playoff hopes alive, right? Because at that point in the middle of the week, if things broke right, Austin could still make the playoffs with 2 victories and some other things happening. And one of the things that needed to happen did happen on Saturday night, but then Austin did not follow through on their part. We'll get to that in a little bit.
Yeah. So I guess let's talk about kind of personnel decisions. Danny Pereira is on the bench to start this one. Owen Wolf is at left back. Then we have Vicen and Cascante as the center backs, John Gallagher as right back. And then, so talking about the shape of this one, once again, we have a new formation to present you all, which was, I think, like, I wrote down technically a 4-2-2-2, spiritually a 4-2-3-1. And so you had Alex Ring and Johan Valencia sitting as the 2 deep midfielders. Then Driussi as kind of a 10/2nd forward. You had Rigoni and Finley both playing as like most of the time, like out and out wingers. They're providing the width, providing like kind of the length and the verticality up the field. And then you had Will Bruin as the number nine. I say spiritually 4-2-3-1 because Driussi often was floating off to the left. And I saw Kevin Morris pointing this out, that if you look at kind of the shape that they ended up in, it was still kind of that box midfield where you had the two deeper lying guys, the two guys kind of playing in the, like those inside spaces. But this time the two attacking guys ended up being Driussi and Bruin in those moments. And then you had the two wingers being able to play up the wing there. And one thing that I'll respectfully disagree with Kevin here is he's saying like, this is the same shape. Therefore it's kind of like the same idea. Nothing much has changed. I think this was quite different looking as far as like, yeah, they were ending up in the same spaces, but the way they were getting there and the, I think just the simplicity of it led to some faster play from Austin, which we'll get into a bit of this, maybe partially due to DC United being not very good at soccer. But also I think the simplicity of this shape and the movements just made it a little easier for them to move the ball around faster.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I think for the players and the shape and just like the way that Austin played, I don't know if it was like super direct, but I think you're right. I think it was faster. It was more attacking. Like this is definitely a team that was deployed a different way and it was deployed to win. And you can see from things like, you know, Austin didn't win the possession game. Austin didn't have more shots, but Austin did have like a higher X goal because Austin was a little bit more direct and a little bit more forward. And I guess in attack, the one thing, yeah, like I had this written out as a 4-3-3, and I don't think Will Bruin's ever going to be part of a top three. Like he is a number nine through and through and through. And maybe there's also like a second forward to your point sometimes, but you know, like God bless that guy for what he brought to what he has brought to the team. Cause like he had a good performance tonight and he was additive. He was additive to the experience and he got the start again on the weekend. And I think he's like been pretty good, you know, in an unexpected way. And it comes back to, I think, I remember you early in the season when people were mad about our French striker, Moussa Djite, being gone. And you're like, well, for me in this moment in time, like I'd rather have Will Bruin than Moussa Djite. And I feel like Will Bruin kind of proved out like why he was a better option tonight and kind of through the end of the season.
Yeah, Will Bruin, he ends up getting the first goal. And I think it's, again, partially due to poor defending by DC United, partially due to a really good ball from Sebastian Driussi, but also it was good movement, a good finish from Will Bruin on this game. So I don't remember how the ball gets to Driussi here, but he's kind of at the top box.
It's off Alex Ring's head. There's a ball that I think DC tried to clear out. Alex Ring kind of cycles it back into his head, and Driussi's a little bit alone at the top of the box.
Yeah, and so as the DC back line is kind of recovering, Bruin recognizes this and kind of makes that like leaning body shape, which is like, I'm going to make a run, play me the ball, which I think is the thing that like Maxi Ruti is not good at, is like, he's not good at making runs in general, but whenever he does make a run, he's not good at kind of like telegraphing it to his own players to know like, hey, play me the ball this way. And Bruin kind of does that lean where it's like, I'm going to go, but I'm holding up to not be offside, and makes that run. Driussi plays a really nice ball over the top, plays Bruin just past the last defender on the back line. Really nice little lofted header towards the back post, goes right over the keeper's fingertips.
Yeah, and for me, the only thing was it was one of those where I was just sure it was going to be called offside. Like I was just waiting for the VAR redecision. And so it's one of these goals, like I've had enough trouble celebrating goals this year that have been called back, so I did not celebrate this one.
I was sure it wasn't offside because of the tickets that you graciously gave me.
Oh cool, okay, you had a good view.
So
awesome,
we were sitting right on that line, and so like I didn't get a great look at it, but my first instinct was like, no, that last guy was holding him on, and they showed the replay. I was like, he was good.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was a good early goal. You know, that was, I think, the theme of both of these games. I think I wrote this in the notes. It's going to be, I mean, the early goal is going to set the tone for the night. And I feel like that really put Austin like on the front foot and showed what Austin was going to do.
Yeah, so the second goal comes in the 21st minute. This one is by Sebastian Driussi. So there's an initial cross, I think, by Gallagher out wide, gets blocked. And I think it kind of throws off the defense as they're kind of like shift back and step their line up a little bit more. It falls to Alex Ring. He plays a cross into the box I don't know if it was good or not. Like, it finds Driussi and it like lands right on his foot. I don't know if that's what he was trying to do. If it was, good on him, but it's like a weird ball, but it does what it was meant to do, I guess. Finds Driussi in the middle of the box. As DC is kind of like shuffling around trying to like reset themselves, nobody marks him, and so he's there all alone. He swings at the ball first try and just kind of whiffs it and touches the ball just enough to like bounce it off of his plant foot, and it sets him up for another one, and he's able to slot that one home. But like a few different lucky moments combined with DC being not very good here led to this goal.
Yeah, and that was it for the first half. We got a DC United almost goal. I think this is an offside, right? Christian Benteke scores. He's correct. Called offside. That guy had a lot of opportunities all night. And other than this one, like Brad Stuver was really, really good at denying him. I think Stuver ended up with maybe 8 saves on the night to preserve the clean sheets. Like this is people have complained, I think, lately about Brad Stuver for whatever reason. I feel like this is very much a good Brad Stuver is an elite shot stopper. And probably bails us out a lot. And this was the kind of game that proved that.
Yeah, absolutely. Austin gets their third goal in the 64th minute. This one is Matt Hedges, and it's assisted by Ragone off of a corner. No, it's not a corner. This one is a corner. I was thinking, getting this confused with the Vicenin one from LAFC. This one is a corner, and this one is very much like the goal that got scored against us last week, where we talked about John Gallagher being just like locked up with a guy on the back post and thinking like, okay, I did my job. Whoever's marking Matt Hedges here has him locked up, but at the very last second, Hedges just kind of like separates himself, jumps up, and the guy just kind of stands there, and Hedges is able to slot the header into to that backside post. I thought Matt Hedges had a good game. He ends up coming in for Vicenin pretty early in the second half. And yeah, Wolf said in the press conference that it was heat exhaustion. Yeah. We were talking about this a bit off air. You said that you noticed that Vicenin just looked a little off pace at times, been getting beat, hasn't been as clean defensively as he's been. I kind of assumed that was due to just him not being match fit, really. And I think him getting heat exhaustion a night when it's like, It was still warm, but it wasn't as hot as it has been. I think that's just him still just kind of working up to match fitness. Do you see that a different way?
No, I think that makes a lot of sense, because we didn't even know if he was going to come back, right? Like, while the club had said he would be back in September, there seemed to be a lot of belief that he wasn't going to be back again this season. So he may have come back a little bit early and not been match fit. Like, I think the long-term future for Leo Vicenin is still really good, but it's been a little bit disappointing to see his form over the last few matches. Not that Austin has a lot of other options either.
Yeah, there. I think we saw enough of him before the injury, though, to know like what his level is. And I don't think it was like a fluke, the rest of what we saw from him, right? Do you think that's true?
No, I think he's still got a lot. I just want to say he's a really good player, and I think he's young, and he's going to grow. And like, I think Austin, like, that was a good signing for Austin. It's just like he hasn't had the best last month. I think this could be an LAFC comment, but I really get annoyed by whichever announcer like butchers his last name too. Who calls him like Vaisanen or something, but I think that was the LAFC one.
There was a Vasianen a few games back too.
Oh, nice too. Okay. It's not that hard. Figure it out.
Okay. What notes do we have from this DC game? I thought Valencia looked good again, right?
Yeah. So that's several matches in a row, you know, and I feel like for a guy that, and it's different, right? Because I think, nobody's ever questioned his ability, like in defense, to kind of be a destroyer, but he had a tendency to pass the ball only sideways and backwards. So it was very limiting in terms of what he brought to the field overall, but he's just like, he's evolving as a player. And I think he's going to be a real asset going forward to the team. There's a little bit of sorting out where everybody fits in the midfield, just in terms of the personnel. Maybe that fixes itself if Alex Ring is not back, but I think that's something to sort out, but there's something there for sure.
Yeah. One of the, I think, more controversial decisions in this lineup is Owen Wolf at left back. This roster came out and like we had seen like, oh, we think Alex or we think Owen's going to play at left back. And then whenever they actually came out, it was more of like a wing back to central midfielder kind of thing. And this one, he was playing a straight up left back in a back four. And I like didn't really like that when it came out. At the end of the game, I was like, oh, Wolf had a pretty good game at left back. Granted, they were playing Chris Durkin as their right wing most of the time. I think he was playing a bit more centrally with would float out wide. And Chris Durkin is traditionally like a defensive midfielder and has played some right back a little bit, I think. And so not the best test of his ability. Andy Nahar was playing right back, who is really skillful on the ball. And Owen faced him up and took the ball off him once or twice. And so did pretty well, I think, against a different team that could have been bad just because he hasn't played there much. But athletically and like profile wise, I think like Owen probably could be a really good fullback. But the fact that he hasn't ever really played fullback makes me not want to play him there in a game.
Yeah, I think this is a like he did good in a single performance in a scene. It was pretty bad with a like a coach that left under mutual agreement as soon as this game was over. But maybe not. I did not feel that was like the John Gallagher against Sporting Kansas City.
Yeah.
You know, in season one, kind of like, oh, this is going to be like a game changer sort of performance.
Yeah. It's like, you did fine today, but let's not do that again. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. And then just like Alex Ring, I think the more that he's able to like attack and be part of the offense, like the better mood he seems to be in. And then therefore, the more he delivers the team. So I thought he had a good game offensively in this one, too.
Yeah, and it's weird because he was not playing as far forward as he has in a lot of the formations here, but he was very involved in the game. And like him and like I said, it wasn't, they weren't playing that differently, but they were just doing it all faster. And just when they were moving the ball side to side, they would do it quickly. And him and Valencia were staying really close together. And then Driussi and Bruin were kind of occupying those slightly wider channels there. And so they were able to kind of play off of each other, open up space for each other, and just move the ball back and forth really quickly, which we've seen Austin do so many times where, yeah, the space is there, you play it, but then you just kind of like sit on the ball for a second. I feel like they just had a bit more urgency to them in this one.
Well, do you want to cover anything else? Does that cover everybody you have notes on? You want to go on to LAFC?
Yeah, I think we can cover everyone else I want to talk about in the LAFC
okay.
game.
Okay.
So this one was the, like, the final must win, right? Like,
well, after, it could have, like, well, yeah, but it turned out to be the final must win. It could have been one of two must wins.
Yeah. So they had to win against DC. They won. As you said, there's like, if we, at that point, after beating DC, we needed to beat LAFC. We needed to beat San Jose on the final day of the season. And we needed a couple of results to go our way. All that ends up not mattering because we lost 4-2, I think was the final score in this one.
It was.
Not as close as that scoreline makes it sound.
Not at all.
This one, again, like, I hate being this guy, but the first little stretch of the game, we came out in that very similar shape, very similar play, like pattern of play as the DC game. And we're moving the ball a lot faster, looked a little bit confident, not really creating many chances off of it, but it looked more effective than what Austin had in most of the previous 10 games.
Yeah, and that little momentum chart that you see on FotMob looked like pretty Austin forward. I think you mentioned this in the last game, but I think the first goal really changed the course of this match, and Austin did not do a good job, you know, playing from behind, sort of once they had gotten punched in the mouth. You know, there's like not a lot of resilience out of the club. So it was like a strong first 10 minutes or so. But once the goal happened, I didn't think Austin looked super competitive from there on out.
Yeah. And just a quick note, this was the exact same lineup, but Owen Wolf was out of the 11 and Nick Lima was back in. But Nick Lima was playing as the left back and John Gallagher is the right back, which was interesting to me because it's been the other way around almost all the time. I know in the DC game when they subbed out somebody and put Lima on and put Lima at left back and left Gallagher at right back. And I kind of assumed it was like, okay, Gallagher's already at right back, so they're not going to change it up, or maybe they like a matchup here, but ran it out again in this game. And so I think that could be any number of things. Like, do you have a theory as to why they switched them all of a sudden?
I don't. I mean, the only thing I can think of is it has to be somehow related to like how Josh thinks the other team is going to line up, and like maybe just matchup wise, like where he thinks people are best positioned. And, you know, we got a giant, I think at some point, didn't we get like a big Nikola Lima throw that led to a goal out of this one? So like, that's one of his skills from playing on the side of the field he's on, but I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I could see it being that. I could see it being like finding combinations of offensive players when you're moving forward. I could also see it being like, I think we've had this discussion before, is like, do you play the better player in their most comfortable position, or do you play the better player in the least comfortable position, knowing that they'll be able to handle it better? And like, I would have argued for most of the last couple of, like most of last season, that John Gallagher is the better of the two. And so maybe you play him out of position knowing that he can handle it there. But I think there's an argument to be made that like, let's put the best guy in his most comfortable position and see what he can do there. And then Lima has played on the left before. It's not like it's completely foreign right to him, but I really don't know why.
I guess the big lineup thing, which we haven't talked about, you mentioned it on the last one, is just like Danny Parreira not starting either of these two matches. Like, what's your take on that?
This is going to be really unpopular, but I've talked about all season, like how special Danny is at a few parts of the game and how deficient he is in other parts of the game, and that like he can do something amazing and then someone else turns the ball over and then he all of a sudden becomes like a detriment to the team defensively at times. I think this like makes an argument, like there are games or like certain lineup combinations where Austin is better without Danny Parreira in the starting 11, which I know sounds like blasphemy, but like I think the DC game sure looked like we were better without him out there, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I could see like with the LAFC being the threat that they are, maybe that's a similar thing. I mean, that's sort of the when Valencia is playing the way he is, that he seems like Danny's one of the players most likely to be negatively impacted by like Valencia getting more playing time.
Yeah. And it's like, I've been like thinking about this all week, saying like, okay, maybe you could play Valencia and Danny as like a true double pivot, because we often didn't see that. A lot of times when they were on the field, it was a little off kilter. We're doing that like that 3-2-2-3 shape kind of. But to see like this back four with a double pivot in front of it, and two of the like that being Valencia and Danny Parreira, like looking forward to next season. But part of what makes Danny so special is his ability to carry the ball forward. And so like by letting him do what he's good at and can affect the game so much at, he's already kind of breaking that model, right? Like Alex Ring will get forward in moments, but he's not going to carry the ball like Danny does. And like, I think it's just, you have to have like a good balance. And I think Danny, in order to be like, he's already a good midfielder, like a really good midfielder in this league. I think for him to be elite, he almost has to have like the right shape and the right partner with him. And I think one of the big questions is like, can Valencia be that guy? Or do we need to go out and find someone to partner him with that can pick up his slack and kind of like, essentially like Alex Ring 2.0, like Edward Lewin from St. Louis would be like my ideal guy, who he can sit back and defend. He's athletic enough to keep up defensively with folks, but talented enough and creative enough to move forward and affect the attack as well. But like Edward Lewin is one of the best players in the league, so I don't know if we can just go out and like get that guy.
Right. Well, maybe with a better scouting department, we'll be able to figure that out. So let's get through some of these goals. I don't think we need to talk about all of them in a lot of detail, because we kind of all know how this one went. And I just overall, like, Danny Buonga is incredible, and he was a menace. And yeah, he's like really, really good, and he seems to really particularly thrive when playing against Austin.
Yeah, this first goal in the 13th minute, there's a ball, like kind of a little teasing ball over the top for Buonga, who was making a run centrally. He's able to get on the end of it, onto the end of it. We were at the opposite side of the field for this game, and so I didn't get a good look at this one live. And I thought like, oh, the defense should have done better here. And maybe they should have, but upon the replay, that little touch that Bolonga takes, like, and kind of flicks it in between the two Austin defenders.
That kind of just totally takes Vaisanen out of the play. And then it's just him and Gasconte, yeah. Right? And he beats him. And you're like, well, that's what's going to happen.
That's a special move. Like, a really good play from Bolonga. And again, like, maybe they should have done better anyway. But that little flick was, that guy's good.
Yeah.
Second goal comes from a penalty. Vaisanen, I can't remember who's carrying the ball into the box, but they kind of take like the little sweep towards the end line, and Vaisanen goes in for the tackle. They're able to touch the ball out of the way. It's not a hard tackle, but I think it's one you have to give. Misjudged it a little bit. Didn't get to the ball fast enough. So I think you have to give that one. They didn't give it initially, but on VAR, like, I think they're always going to give that one.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that. It wasn't like reckless that so much or whatever. It was just one of those. Like, it was just like he went to ground and just like made a mistake, but it was in the box, and it's one thing that you have to call. So that's like 2-0 at the half. That's one goal from Bolonga. Then Bolonga picks up the next goal. It says unassisted, which was there like, did it go off somebody?
I think it's because of the deflection. It was I think it might have been Bogush who plays the ball from the other side. Very much deserves an assist.
Right.
It's a good ball. Julio Cascante very much should have cut it out and doesn't. Right,
it's like he went out of his way to get out of the way of the ball almost.
Yeah. And so Gallagher has two guys on his backside. And again, there's like the replay shows this like sideline view of Gallagher recovering, and you see Bolonga turn on the Jets, and like Gallagher's a fast guy. And it looks like Bolonga's not even trying and is running faster than John Gallagher. Again, right. Special player, but it beats Cascante somehow. There's two players at the back post, and Gallagher gets caught by surprise because he didn't think the ball was actually going to get there. And those two players slide in, and Bolonga gets his foot onto the end of it, and it goes in.
Yeah, so that's 3-0 then at 54. Then Cristian Oliveira gets the one to make it 4-0. This was like one of those in the aftermath. There were like a lot of Austin FC guys like around the box doing something. I don't know what, but like everybody kind of got beat on this play.
The very end of it was kind of chaotic, but going back, the initial ball, it's kind of a long ball over the top. Danny Pereira drops in and does well to like fill, like cover that space, and is reading the ball. I don't think he realizes Bolonga is closing in behind him. And so he plays a little bit casually, and it's like instead of like clearing it, he like slows up his run, and it almost is like he's going to try to bring the ball down on his foot and turn and carry it forward. But Bolonga gets there right as the ball arrives. And I don't think Danny knew he was there, but gets the ball off of him, turns, shoots. Stuver makes a really nice save, but then it falls back into traffic. And who is it that gets there? Oliveira finds it and slots it past Stuver, who had just dived for another ball and made the save. So once it got there, it was like a bit chaotic, but like Danny should have done better on that first one for sure, and just been a bit more aware to cut that one out.
Yep. And that was, I mean, effectively, well, I don't know. I mean, it was kind of it after the first goal, but that was definitely it.
Yeah.
Austin does claw a couple back.
Yeah, the first one comes in the 75th minute. This is Leo Vaisanen. This is the one that I was getting confused with, but I think this is a cross. This is a crossing from Danny Ferreira. Really good service, but then Vaisanen does like jumps up, does that like no look flick onto the back post. I kind of think it might have hit Vaisanen's head and then gone off of Chiellini's head, but either way, like does good to direct it back towards that far post. And that one goes in again, like, this never felt like it was the start of a comeback, really. And so just more of a consolation goal. Good for Leo. Good little confidence boost for him, maybe. Yeah. And then the last one comes in the 90, like fourth
90
minute
plus
of
four
stoppage
out of
time.
94. Yeah. Yeah.
And this one is an own goal. And so it's a nice little sequence. I think Memo Rodriguez plays the cross to the backside to Gallagher, who's kind of sitting off of that far post. He heads it back across goal to Zardes, who's making a nice run, and Chiellini has to track him. And Chiellini, just out of desperation, just kind of dives down to try to get something on it and ends up heading it past his own keeper. So unfortunate for Chiellini there, fortunate for us. I want to take a moment just to say how much of a pleasure it is to watch Giorgio Chiellini play in person. He's 38 years old, I think. Like not the fleetest of foot anymore, but man, that guy is special. And like for folks who don't know, like one of the best center backs to ever play the game, right? Like just to see like how crafty he is and just how smart he is and like knows how to use his body, knows how not to get beat for his like what he lacks physically these days too. Like that dude is so good. Like, so I did not enjoy this game all the way through, but very grateful to get to have seen Giorgio Chiellini play in person.
Well, I think if I remember reading like the rumors, right? Like this may have been like the end of his time in LA too. So this may have been, he's like, he was like wanting to go back to Italy also. So it's maybe the last chance that you get to see him in person.
Yeah. What other notes do you have about this game, Jeremiah?
I think we talked through a lot of it. We talked about Danny. You know, we talked about how much like the early goals matter. It annoyed me how closely the jerseys looked alike for the two teams because they were both in some shade of green on a green field. And I don't have a lot of other notes, you know, other than that. Like I kept watching to see, you know, Stuver gave up four goals. Like if he reverted and had a bad game, but I felt like he was just kind of left hung out to dry by his defense a lot.
Yeah, he made some really good saves in this game too.
Yeah,
actually,
he made some really good plays. Yeah,
there's one early on where Belonga tries to catch him. It's one of those where he's like his angle is set up to where like he's gonna go far post for this one, and just hits a really sharp low ball towards the near post. And Stuver does really well to react and just get a foot to cover that very last little inch that he needs to get his foot on it. And Belonga goes out of his way to go over and like give Stuver a high five, like, hey, you got me there.
That was good. And I think, you know, this game, one of the things that really highlighted for me that hopefully we will have some change to next year, it's going to take like a roster move, is like, it was like when Julio Cascante plays against an elite offense, he's just overmatched and there's just no way around it. And, you know, he's like, Julio's going to Julio, and like, he's not going to grow, you know, at this point in his career. He can do fine like in certain moments, and like he's got certain skills, but I would really like to, if it's not Matt Hedges, see like another defensive back partner for Leo Fison going into 2024.
Yeah, it either needs to be a replacement or a structural shift to protect him. But yeah, like you said, he is who he is. Like, this is not going to change.
And then I know one of the things I just like wrote a note for after the match is that, it's like, so Austin season's effectively over, right? There's like, there's one game, there's a weird international break. There's one game left against San Jose, and it doesn't really matter for Austin, especially. I think San Jose probably has like playoff positioning to care about. So somebody asked Ethan Finley after the match about like, well, how do you even go to the next match? You need to care. And I thought he had a really strong point to say, like, yeah, for a player, it matters, right? Like, everybody's playing for a contract, and whatever happens next week is important. And I guess the other thing I read a little bit of about that is probably worth mentioning is like Ethan Finley was the player that we were expecting to get in the post-match press conference, and was the only player that came and talked to the press. And I feel like a lot of times in these moments when things are challenging, Ethan Finley's been the person that stepped up out of everybody. And maybe that's from being a veteran and being like a Players Association rep or whatever, but I appreciate that for him and wish there was a little bit more of that in this club this year.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I love Ethan Finley for it, but like, you'd want there to be some other leadership there, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's, again, we can get into it during the soft season and like what Austin needs, because I think that's what we need to talk about. And I think Josh mentioned this maybe a week or two ago, and you know, I don't like know how much I buy it, but like, we need to talk about where the leadership comes from too in 2024. I think when we talk about the offseason, because clearly that was something that was like lacking this year, and I think it showed.
Yeah. All right. Let's take another quick break. We're going to come back and talk about Austin FC 2's.
Yeah, right. Let's talk about some good news. Yeah. Let's get some good stuff. We got Austin FC 2, like Western Conference Finals appearance. We've got some like national team call ups and some awards. Like, let's get into that part of the show.
Yeah. Hang tight. We'll be right back with all that.
Moon Tower Soccer is brought to you by Covert Ford. The Coverts have been meeting the needs of local car buyers for 114 years because of their service, financial expertise, and support after the sale.
In addition to supporting car buyers, Covert's an important part of the soccer community and the official automotive partner of Austin FC. Jeremiah, tell me about a car.
We do have stock number 2230073. Before discounts, it's going to be $53,815. This is, and afterwards, you will get it for $43,815 plus tax, title, and license, save $10,000 and 3.9% APR for 60 months with approved credit from Ford Motor Company. So, again, get yourself in a Ford truck, courtesy of our friends at Covert Ford. Moon Tower Soccer is also brought to you by Sage Wilson Realty. While there are no more matches at home this season, we want to thank Sage Wilson Realty for the tickets they've given away to friends and fans, you know, throughout the year. And we look forward to hopefully continuing that partnership into 2024.
If you or someone you know are in need of Sage real estate advice in Austin, talk to our friends at Sage Wilson Realty. Be sure to check them out online at sagewilson.com. All right, Jeremiah, we're back. We're going to talk about the team that never lets us down, Austin FC 2.
That's right. The team that is still playing for meaningful trophies, hopefully up through the next couple of weeks. So they advanced the Western Conference Finals with a 1-0 win in Tacoma against the Tacoma Defiance, which is Seattle's second team. So they pick up a 1-0 win with a goal from Valentin Noel in the 82nd minute, and will have the opportunity to advance to play against Colorado Rapids 2 at Dick's Sporting Goods Park on October 15th at 8:30 p.m.
So Damian Loss ended up, we kind of knew this was going to happen, but after the first team game on Saturday, caught a flight at some point, not too long after that, got his way up to Washington, played in this game, had a killer game, really, really good game from Damian Loss. I know I've talked about clean sheets not always being a product of the goalkeeper. That's true on this night, but Damian Loss came up big several times in this game.
Yeah, he was so good. And I guess one of the other things that we were a little bit surprised by is that he was not accompanied by CJ Fodre on the
surprised by that.
Disappointed. I was disappointed that CJ Fodre didn't have a chance to be in the game. Not surprised.
Yeah, disappointed. I think I'm of two minds on this. I think from a competitive standpoint, having Micah Burton out, it would be cool to see CJ come back down just as kind of a ringer and be better than the other team. But at the same time, I've seen a lot of people complaining about if he's not going to play on the first team, let him play on the second team. And it's you want your best available bench options on the bench for the first team, right? If he is that, then let him be that. And the fact that he plays or doesn't play is a matter of circumstance given a game, I think. But also, looking at the second team guys, CJ hasn't been there for the last little stretch, and he wasn't there for the playoff game. And so to say, okay, thanks for doing all this work, now you're on the bench, and CJ is going to come in and do the real work. I don't like that either. I want to see some of these guys kind of get this reward too. And so you can talk about CJ Fodre's development and whether or not sitting on the bench with the first team is better than playing for the second team, but it's absolutely better for Christo Vella to get these minutes for the second team.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. And he looked pretty good in his minutes that he had too. Did you see the Damian Loss press conference? Not press conference, but the interview at halftime.
Yeah,
he had, where they talked to him about being the MLS next pro keeper of the year. He was good. That's just what I'm gonna say. It was kind of coach speaky, but not unintelligent. You know, it was.
Yeah.
Anyhow, I thought he was interesting. I liked him more as a person after. I don't see him talk a lot. Just out in public, right? Because you don't get a lot of the chance to do that as an ex-pro player, but he was good.
So competitive too. We saw this during Goalie Wars, right? I think this was our first look into this, where the other guy he faced in the finals of Goalie Wars at the All-Star game was having fun, just kind of making jokes. And Damian was pissed when he lost. It's no, I came here to win this competition. And I loved seeing that. It's I don't. Yeah, it's fun to get to see this personality and like the kinds of personality that thrives in these moments. And like, that's it. Like, that's what a coach wants to see from his players is like, I take this very seriously. This is my job. And to see this from Damian Loss at 21 years old, that's special.
Yeah. And we didn't talk about this during the first team part of the discussion, but you know, we got news a couple weeks ago that he's like he's officially the backup goalkeeper for the first team. So like, he's carrying a pretty heavy load, like doing these back and forths, right? Over and over again. And it's not affecting his play for the second team at all. So, I mean, it's probably part of being like 21. Like when I was 21,
I think easier to
recover quicker, but yeah.
Easier for a goalkeeper as well, where like he's the physical load on his body is not as great. And like he doesn't need like the stamina or the legs as much as like an outfield player would. You still need that. And I'm still like flying day of when the rest of your team is there the day before affects you, but it's going to be less of a big deal than it is for an outfield player, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. So we get the goal from Valentin Noel, assist from David Rodriguez. So like he did good. I thought Bobasi Bararanga was really threatening and really good in the attack in this game. Are there any other player notes you want to cover?
We got that first goal, and then Tacoma sends up their goalkeeper on a set piece.
Oh, forgot about
and
that. Yeah.
EJ Johnson had just subbed on and gets the ball out on a breakaway, and the keeper's sprinting back towards goal. EJ has an open net, and he hits the post and bounces it out of bounds. And I was like, oh no, this is the turning point of this game, isn't it? And I was afraid they were going to come down, and Tacoma comes back and is putting pressure on Austin with just kind of like repeated set pieces where they put a cross in and it'd go out for a corner. They put it in a corner and it'd go out for another corner and go out for a throw. And just like, they kept getting these little half chances like that. And I was like, EJ Johnson's going to feel terrible if we lose because of that missed open net. It ends up not mattering because Austin's able to see out the rest of that game, but it very well could have.
Yeah. That would have been so disappointing if that had mattered. For sure. But yeah, I mean, it was solid. I guess the one thing I should have remembered about the playoffs that I didn't until that game, because it got so late in it, was as opposed to in the regular season where they go straight to PKs, there would have been two 15-minute halves played. So that may be relevant to Austin's game this week, because like, I mean, their Austin FC2's attack is not amazing. And their defense is incredible. So I feel like these low scoring games are probably going to continue. If they continue to progress.
One big moment we forgot to mention is that Tacoma got a red card in the second half. They sent off A.B. Sissoko for violent conduct. And in that little scrum, like, it starts with a Tacoma player kind of getting pushed out of bounds. An Austin player kind of like pushes someone. That guy turns around and shoves that player into the awning there. There's a big scuffle. It's hard to see what's going on, but Sissoko gets sent off, who was on the field, but then Chris Pinkham, who was warming up over on the side for Austin, also gets a red card, so he won't be available for this next game. He hasn't played a ton, but he's one of the few defensive substitutes we have on this team, and so I think for that alone, that could end up being could end up having an effect on this next game, because if one of the center backs goes down, you need to bring someone else. I think at this point, like, you have to put Alonso Ramirez at center back, and that's kind of the only other option you have, unless Kip Keller is healthy again and able to play, but he didn't travel for this one and may not be ready to go yet.
Yeah, I didn't think about like the sort of the after effect of that. So we'll see how it goes. So Austin's going to play, I think I said this earlier, but against Colorado Rapids 2 on Sunday the 15th. And then the winner of that match will face the winner of New England Revolution 2 versus Columbus Crew 2. And I think everybody would love a Austin versus Columbus final, just for the narrative.
And I believe I have this correct, but Austin is the lowest seeded team still in the playoffs. And so I don't think there's any chance of us playing at home at this point.
I know for sure if it's Columbus, it's on the road. I don't know about New England, but I think you're right.
I think they were the three seed, the two or three seed in the East. So I think it's away no matter what.
Yeah. Well, It's okay. Yeah. If you're really into traveling, maybe you can get yourself a flight to Columbus or New England in a couple weeks to like
watch. I think some people, I've seen some chatter.
Some people are going to Colorado, right?
Yeah. And people are talking about that next one too. So there's going to be a non-zero number of Austin FC fans at probably both of these next two games if they both happen.
Which I love, which just like shows this fan base and its insanity in favor of their team. So we have a couple other call-ups that we wanted to mention. Irvin Torres is going to be on the USU 17 camp. Again, this is like just a training camp in October. And then I think your favorite Austin FC player, Brandon Craig, is going to be called up for the US Olympic team. And there's two friendlies going on. So he will actually get action. So again, it's good to see people in the Austin FC system continue to get call-ups. Although like Craig's not going to be part of the Austin FC system come 2 weeks, 3 weeks from now, we think, right?
Yeah. Yeah. He's on loan. No chance Philly's going to sell him to us just because he is a big prospect. Like they're going to hope to sell him to Europe in a few years, probably. It is a bit of surprise to see him on this team. Like looking at this Olympic squad, which is U23, it's a lot of guys who are like starting for MLS clubs or getting a lot of playing time in second divisions in Europe. And like I've said this on the show, like I don't think Brandon Craig is at the MLS level at the moment, but a lot of the guys he's going to be playing next to on this team are, and like John Tolkien, for example, like I know like center backs have a bit of a longer timeline of as far as getting pushed into first team stuff, usually takes a bit more experience, but for the coaching staff to think highly enough of him to put him into this team, I mean, it goes to show like kind of the promising future that he has. I still maintain he's not good enough to play in MLS right now.
Oh, I'm not gonna add to that. Like I don't have that strong opinion on it, so I'll just leave it there. And then I guess two other bits of news. So we got the end of season awards for the league, which I know apparently is something that you really, really love because of how sophisticated and complicated the nomination process is. So when Wolf is one of the finalists for the MLS Young Player of the Year, and then Brad Stuver is nominated for one of the, it's really long, Audi Goals, Drive Progress, Impact, with the Being a Good Dude. Like the Being a Good Dude award, I think, is the one that he's a finalist for. So do you want to touch on anything on that before we close it out?
Yeah, I mean, most of these categories have a lot of players in them. I think there's 20 or so in the Young Player Award. But among that list, Owen is, I know a lot of these guys' ages off the top of my head and didn't bother to look up the rest of them. But I would guess in the younger third of this list and is eligible for this award for three more seasons. And so I would be surprised if Owen Wolf is still playing in MLS three seasons from now, but if he is, he would still be eligible for this award, which I think that is an honor in and of itself. I think the other thing that stood out to me is the Coach of the Year award had 23 nominees, two of which have been fired since this list came out. Which makes me wonder like what the criteria is for getting nominated to this list.
It does not seem to be very complicated, but we'll see if either of our guys win an award, win any of these prestigious awards.
All right, anything else, Jeremiah?
No, let's go ahead and close it out.
All right, before we do that, we'd like to remind you to rate, review, and subscribe. And we're doing this till the end of the month, right, Jeremiah?
Yes, till the end of October.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. If you leave us a written review, we will donate $5 to Community First Village in kind of collaboration with the beer release from Austin Beer Works and Fighting Leslie's and Pollo FC. So yeah, leave us a review. We'll return your kindness to our Austin neighbors. If you want to continue the conversation, come find us on Twitter at LVAHero87, at JBentley_ATX, and then at Moontower Soccer on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Then sign up for the Patreon. You can get some cool merch while also supporting us. And then check out Phil West's Substack, verdealday.substack.com. If you add the /Moontower to the end of it, you'll get a 20% discount. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week to preview the San Jose match. We'll maybe talk a little bit of the offseason, maybe have an interview, and cover any other news that happens. Until then, I'm Landon Cottom.
I'm Jeremiah Bentley.
We'll catch you next time. When no one is around.
Thing for nothing, so you never.
Oh my God.